Thanks for connecting with me on the Uncommodified podcast today. I'm Tim Windsor, and I'll be your host of another Uncork conversation. This one's with keynote speaker, facilitator, and author Kristen Lindeen, entitled The Ripple Effect. In this episode, Kristen and I explore the idea of generational journeys, how personal and professional values translate, transfer, and continue to transform from one generation to another. During this conversation, we muse about the privilege we all have to call out the gifts we see in others. We ask if our journeys are determined choice or decided destiny. We challenge you to make sure you are transferring passion and not just process and principles to the next generation in your business or in your life. And we encourage you to understand that ideas and ideals are caught and taught. Kristen provides some great advice and practical tools to empower and equip leaders, parents, and educators to transfer foundational values to the next generation. And along the way, we break the Wizard of Oz syndrome in me and in you when we let you behind the curtain. Grab a coffee and get ready to drop your pebble into the pond and become the ripple effect. Hey guys, welcome back to the Uncommodified podcast and to another Uncork conversation. This is going to be a great one today. Today, my guest is Kristen Lindeen. Kristen, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Excellent. Looking forward to this. Now, for my listeners, let me give you a sense of what we're going to explore today. So Kristen and I are going to explore an idea that I want to call generational journeys today. And it's all about this idea of how do personal values and sometimes the businesses that embody them, how do they translate, how do they transfer, and how do they continue to transform from one generation to another? And that's going to be the sort of the macro theme that we explore today, generational journeys. And Kristen's been on a generational journey for a long time. I've known you by email and by correspondence for probably the better part of 10 yeah. years. But this is the first time that we're sort of meeting, yeah. I guess, through technology. So it is great to do this. And I know for the last over a decade plus, you've been speaking on this principle of personal accountability from John Miller, your dad's best-selling book, and this is how our connection happens. And obviously, I'll explain to my listeners a little bit more about that. You've been doing this for a long time. You've been teaching this material. You've taught that to over 25,000 people in 150 plus organizations. But you've also now coming into this generational journey that we're going to talk about today. You've created some companion material. So the QBQ workbook based on the QBQ book, as well as you employed your master's in curriculum and instruction and corporate education to author the IONIT curriculum for schools. Yeah. And my connection primarily is because you manage the network of independent QBQ trainers and distributors, and of which I'm one of them, and that's where our connection comes yes. through. And I've always appreciated connecting with you over the years, Kristen. Just as I've interacted with my customers and trying to figure out how to help them, you've been amazing at doing that. And I wanted to say thank you very much, by the way. You've served me and my clients really well over the years.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate that. And Kristen lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota with her husband, Eric, and their four children. So you're sort of on the way in the Miller tradition here, Kristen, I suppose.
Yes, I suppose I am.
Excellent. Well, listen, all great Uncork conversations for me, they start with a drink. Sometimes at night when I do them, they start with a glass of wine. But since we're recording during the daytime on a Monday morning, yeah. we're going to have crack open a coffee together. So cheers to you. I'm going to grab my coffee. It's amazing how just sitting across the table having a drink releases conversation. So that's sort of why I like this idea. So again, this overall theme that we're going to explore today, generational journeys, how personal values and sometimes the business values or the businesses that teach those values translate, transfer, and continue to transform across generations, one generation to another. It's sort of like that handoff, I guess, in a marathon, Kristen, when the runner behind you gives you a baton. Mm-hmm. And you've received a baton of John's passion. And so one of the questions I have for you as we start, how and when did you realize that your dad's passion, John Miller's passion, was becoming and is your passion? When did that first start for you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Tim, because I started on this journey because my dad saw in me skill and talent for the stage. And he saw that because I was in theater and drama throughout the year. So as my father, he knew that in me. And as I got married and graduated college and got married and started in my professional career in the higher education world, he saw me kind of languishing at a desk from 8 to 5 every day and just had an idea one day, hey, why don't you start speaking about QBQ and personal accountability to youth? And I said, oh, well, I never thought about that. Sure, I'll give it a try. I mean, I'm up for winging anything, giving anything a shot in life. And so when he offered me that, it wasn't so much that I came to him and said, I have so much passion for personal accountability, I just want to go teach it. It's more like he saw in me, which is that like he saw in me a chance to create a legacy, and he saw the talent and the skill and the ability in me, and then said, hey, here's an opportunity. And so I started teaching QBQ to youth because he was getting a lot of inquiries from people who had hired him who then wanted to pass it on to the next generation. And he was realizing he wasn't connecting with the next generation as well as maybe I could. At the time, I was a mid 20 something. So it worked out really well. So that's kind of how I got my start. And as I really learned the material that he had been teaching my entire junior high and high school and college years, I became passionate about it because I more fully understood really how he had developed it, where it came from, and like the nitty gritty nuts and bolts. Whereas as a kid, it was taught in our home. But I think it's different when you are then taught to teach it. So the passion really built as I went along learning the job.
And that's an interesting way to describe it, because sometimes, you know, there's a passion and then we follow it. And sometimes our passion finds us along the way when we start doing maybe what we, you know, maybe what we were meant to do or what we were destined to do. I don't know if those are the right words or not. And that really sort of leads me to that next part of that journey. So do you think that this, in the end of the day, when you look at what you do now and how you've come into it, do you think this journey was something that you, that even though your dad encouraged and called out in you, that you fundamentally chose? Or did it find you? Yeah. Did it choose you? Was this a determined choice on your side? Or was this just destiny as you've explored this over the years?
I don't know. I think that it's not something I ever thought. I mean, I would tell people I never thought I'd go into the family business because truly it wasn't a family business. It was dad. And dad did this and dad wrote books and dad became a speaker and that was what dad did. It wasn't like it was other small family businesses where you see where you might fit in on the team. It was just him. So the fact that he invited me along in that, I think, was such a selfless act on his part, like bringing me in and sharing credit almost for this incredible company and content that he'd built. But I never thought that this is what I would do. I thought I was going to work a job like any person and then start having babies and be a mom. And that's just what I thought. So, but I do think, in order to answer your question, I do think while I didn't see it coming, I didn't choose it necessarily, I do think it was ordained because it fits really well with my husband's career and calling as a pastor. And it fits with my desire to be home as much as possible with my kids while still having an outlet for that professional passion and the skills that I learned in college and graduate school, and being able to be home, but still have that ability to bring in income for our family, support our family, while also having an incredible mission and passion through my work. Not that people who go and just work a job, that's bad, but I love that my ability to support my family goes hand in hand with something that I enjoy doing.
Absolutely. No, it's a privilege. And, you know, I've been a consultant for the better part of 30 years, and I've worked with a lot of businesses that, I've worked for some very large corporations that are, you know, traded on the stock exchange, and I've worked for some very fairly large and developing family businesses, and I've been through with them through generational transition. So this is an interesting journey to me.
It is.
As I watch these generational journeys happen in companies, and you watch what goes well, frankly, about it at times, and what doesn't go well, and how sometimes what happens is just the business is transferred or or transition, but the passion isn't. And then it becomes super hollow. There's something gets lost. It's like there's a shell, but the heart of the thing gets stripped out of it in that generational transition, which is very sad. Yeah. And so what's exciting to me, you know, even though it maybe didn't happen in quite the same way, and it's not a large corporation, but the fact that the passion, which was the ignition point, the DNA of this thing, isn't dead in the next generation. Absolutely. I.e., this isn't just now a business and a book thing, and this is what I do because we can make money with it. And of course, you can make money with it because it's a great idea and it helps people. But the fact that the passion lives on and it lives well within you, that's an important part of that transition.
Absolutely,
and that's exciting for me.
Yeah. Me too. Thanks for identifying that.
No, it is, because I have seen this go wrong really a lot, where at the end of the day, all that survives is something that's really hollow.
Sure.
And that's the one thing I would say about dealing with you over the years, Kristen, is that as I dealt with John, and then as I dealt with you, is very clear to me that you embodied not only the ideals of this thing, and the idea of QBQ, but the passion behind it, which convinces people that we really believe what we're talking about, and the power of belief is so critically important in this. And you obviously believe.
I do. Yeah.
And that's a big part of it.
Yeah. It really is just such a fabulous concept and tool that even if I tried to quit using it, I don't think I could, because it does just, even just this morning, there was some food smushed on the wall. And I immediately said, who smashed this blueberry all over the wall? And in that exact moment, I was like, oh, that's a lousy question. That's QBQ. Like, I need to reframe that question. I need to say, how can I help solve this problem? Like, it's amazing how even in that moment, in my mundane family life of cleaning blueberry squish off the wall that some toddler wiped there, QBQ comes into my mind, because it is just, it's so ingrained in who I am.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, we talked about passion, and then we talked a little bit, we were about this idea of mission and personal mission. So, you know, when you look at John's mission, which has been very clear to him over the years, one of my questions also is not just the transition, you know, again, of the business and of the passion, but there's a mission behind that. So when you look at your personal mission, is it subtly or is it substantially different than John's? Yeah. Like, what is personal mission look like for Kristen?
I got to tell you, I saw that question in the prep list, and you're pushing me, you're challenging me here, because I've never been the type to really think through my mission, my purpose. I would say our mission is very similar. I think where we start to dissect is just in the natural differences in our generations, and the fact that he's a man, I'm a woman, he's a dad, I'm a mom. Like, I think there's just some differences there. And then I do believe that this time of virtual learning and online, and everything's online, like, I think that I do see some differences, not in the mission of helping individuals practice personal accountability and make it a core value. That mission is the same, but I think our strategies will begin to diverge a bit more. And I bring a, like, hey, let's try this and let's try this and let's try this, because these are the new tools of the time. So I think I bring that to the table. But when I really think through it, I believe the mission at the very core is still the same. It's to help individuals and organizations make personal accountability a core value. That has not changed. It's just a matter of how we see best doing that and how that's going to work best. And I might have a little bit more of a heart to reach the individuals who are not a part of an organization who has the funds to bring in training. So that's why I have pushed things like I Own It and Specs and Planks, which is our Bible study supplement that people can do along with like a church group. And the QBQ workbook was really something that I wanted over the years, because I picture someone like me who isn't part of a large organization who's going to bring in training, but it's someone at home who just wants to better herself or himself. And hey, here's this tool, or here's this webinar, or here's this broadcast that you can use from QBQ Inc. to work on personal accountability. So I think that's where I bring a little bit more of that to the company.
Absolutely. And that tips back into that theme, this generational journey, because, you know, the business is on a journey, because it gets a life. It becomes like a person in a lot of ways. It has a journey and a life. that thing clearly is translated and is transitioning to you in its journey. But that journey to the onward generation is a core part of what I do want to focus our conversation on, because I think that is strategically brilliant. And although a lot of my work over the years, you know, like John's, has been in the corporate world, yeah. I know when I began to look at this idea in the in our own family's application, the challenge was that obviously the material was crafted for the corporate world in the beginning. All of the examples, all of the stories, primarily, they lived in family, but they lived in that corporate world. Translating it to my children, not only is it, you know, is our application different, but we're different generations. Mm-hmm. We have different ways of looking at the world. We've had different life experiences. And so I do love that you are tipping into that other world with some of the material that you've created. And that's really what I do want to focus the rest of our conversation on. So that being said, so why is personal accountability, this idea, so important to you? And do you believe for the people that maybe are a little different audience that you want to appeal this message to? Why is this so critically important to that generation and to my children's children and your children?
Yeah. Well, I think it's just as important to them as it was to the last generation, because personal accountability it's timeless. It's not a fad. It's not a trend. It's something that we have needed since literally the beginning of time, because it's not human condition to accept responsibility. It's not what we do naturally. We naturally self-protect. We naturally defend. We naturally push off the blame and the responsibility. It is a learned trait to look at something and say, okay, someone else may have caused that problem, but what can I do to fix it? How can I help solve that problem? That is something that is learned. And because it's learned, it has to be taught. And so whose job is it to teach the next generation? Well, it's mine. It's not theirs. It's mine. And obviously I know that because I'm a mom, but even those out there who don't have children, it's still our job to pass these timeless and crucial, essential truths onto the next generation. And honestly, the next generation is a little lost and floundering simply because of the breakdown of family. And there's not as much legacy generational teaching going on in our culture because things are just different than they have been. And so we have to kind of be even more intentional to reach out to those who maybe aren't our children and find ways to bring them into the fold and share these truths that will help them succeed in life and keep going in this crazy life that we're living.
Yeah. When you first began to get a vision for I Own It, which and maybe you can help me understand exactly what I Own It is, yeah. But when you began to frame that idea, what was the genesis of that, and what have you seen happen, and what's been the outcome?
Yeah. So at the time, we were receiving a fair amount of inquiries from school districts. And that's actually, like I said, what started me in this journey as an employee of QBQ Inc. is that there were school districts wanting John to come in and teach the staff. And then, hey, could you throw in like a student rally and teach the kids as well? And he tried that a couple times, and it was just, it didn't flop, but it was like, whoo, man, I'm old. That's how he kind of felt. So that's when he started thinking, well, let's bring Kristen in. So it was because of the amount of school districts and teachers and professionals in the industry of the education industry who were saying, oh my goodness, our teens need this, that I came on board and was like, well, then let's make a tool. I just got my master's in curriculum. Let me feel like I got that for a reason and actually use this a little bit. And so we worked together to create this curriculum. And the vision was that it's very affordable because you don't have to buy a book for every kid. You just purchase the leader guide, the teacher's guide, and then the teacher can just use their hard copy QBQ book and the curriculum and print off things off the website. We have the things listed on the website that they can print for worksheets and whatnot, and they can just walk the kids through. It's basically just facilitating discussion, just like you would do with organizations with the QBQ training program. It's the same thing. It's just way cheaper and for students. And the idea was this is for education only, for teachers working with youth. What has then happened is parents have found it and the homeschool community has found it, and it's bled into those areas as well. So I had a parent hire me once to go through the curriculum with her daughter on Zoom because just she thought that someone other than mom herself would be helpful to walk her 18-year-old through this. So we had some Zoom lessons and just chatted. And that was my way of saying, sure, I'll pour into this next generation. Even though I have my own kids at home, I can help you with your teenager. And that is how it's kind of been morphing. And I see it continuing to morph and change. I see, you know, perhaps putting it online as like a e-format type webinar system that parents could walk their kids through. I see starting a Facebook group that we could do things with. So I have a lot that I'm thinking through. And I think just getting through COVID and four kids of my own, I'm getting there of maybe expanding that even more and offering more opportunities for that. But I would love to see families continuing to engage. So what we originally saw as a curriculum for education professionals, we now see families utilizing in their homes, which I absolutely love.
Well, and what I love about it too is that it really is the progressive nature of QBQ in that, you know, from in the beginning, this idea is somebody else's responsibility to make sure that people around me, live out.
Yeah.
And then we begin to ask ourselves a better question, which apparently, you know, some really great people that I've met tell me, you know, has a certain structure to it.
Yeah.
When we ask a better question, then ultimately the answer lies in myself, whether I'm a parent. If I'm a parent, if I'm not careful, I think I look to the school. If my kids go to a traditional institution school, not homeschooled, I look to the teacher and say it's their responsibility.
Right. What are you doing?
Unfortunately, and the teacher looks to the principal and says, well, it's your responsibility. Right. And then the principal looks to the district supervisor, it's your responsibility. Yeah. He looks to the local government official, I don't know, who looks to somebody else. Yeah. And eventually everyone's looking at everyone else, but nobody's doing anything.
Yep. We call that the circle of blame. Right. It just keeps going and going and going and going. Yep.
100%. And I've learned a few things over the years about this QBQ idea. And that this process that you're working on is bringing down the ultimate accountability and responsibility for this message to the closest person, to the people that you want to deliver the message to, which is these children, whether they're quite young or maybe in their teens. And obviously you've started with your kids quite young in these messages. and it's amazing because kids are so pliable, right? You can teach these things to them early. Maybe we have a better chance long term.
Fingers crossed. Send some prayers. Right?
I know. Yeah. You mentioned that this is a problem that is in the beginning of time. I was mentioning to John. I mean, my listeners come from a large sort of swath of culture and society, and you know, there's a story for some people out there. They'll see it as a religious story. Others won't. It doesn't really matter how you see it, but you know, there's in the beginning original creation story from a Judeo-Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, immediately things don't go well because that's what happens, I suppose, when you get a couple humans around, and immediately there is a lack of accountability or responsibility for behavior. It shows up immediately immediate in the human condition.
It does.
And so, like you said, you're addressing something that is in essence, one of the greatest struggles of having a belly button, of being born into this experience, is taking responsibility for my own actions, taking the responsibility for the outcomes or impact, and being able to say I'm complicit at some level in something.
Absolutely.
It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a very intentional decision to not blame, complain, and push off action and wait for other people to get the job done. It takes thought. It takes intention. And this is not something that the next generation is just going to figure out. We have to model it. We have to teach it verbally. And we have to show them the way. And we can't do that if we're not practicing it ourselves and being really aware. And so it's in those moments, for me, especially for my world right now, it's a parenting world. And when I'm in that world and I'm complaining and nagging and being annoying, honestly, my kids help me see that I need to step it up and I need to start taking care of me and being responsible and owning my own stuff so that I can lead them better. And it's the same in the business world. I mean, if I'm managing people, like I have to be on my game, modeling personal accountability, or my people are going to go, oh, well, if she's not practicing that, why would I? it's not important.
100%. And that's why this morning, Eric had to fess up and say it was him who squished the blueberries on the wall.
Absolutely. He didn't like the muffins I made, and he just chucked it over there.
See, Eric was hoping one of the kids would take it for him.
Absolutely.
Right? But the problem is you're the QBQ person, and you've written curriculum and all this, so Eric has to go, okay, Kristen, it was me. I did it.
For sure.
But that's the exciting part about this. Again, I love this generational journey. And so again, this idea obviously wasn't just born, you know, in John. John had influence in his life, and he talks about his own father. So John has influence. This thing starts to cascade through generation through generation. Mm-hmm. But what I love about it is that you guys didn't just wag your finger and point your finger at other people and say, hey, you got to do better and be better.
Yeah.
You created a process and a mechanism, a practical mechanism that I know as I've practiced it, you know, more often than not, immediately points me towards a more accountable discussion with myself first and then a more accountable action.
Yep.
So what I do love about that, because so often we're wagging our finger at each other and saying, you should take more responsibility for your life, young man.
Yep.
But we don't give them a practical way to do that. And that's what I do love about this material. And the idea that you've now taken that and you're translating and communicating it onto to that younger generation so that they can get a leg up and not learn this like I did. You know, I didn't encounter the QBQ until I was in my mid-30s. You know, so the fact that you're doing this at a much younger age with the curriculum that you've developed, that is really exciting. And and I just want to say I really appreciated your vision for that.
Yeah, thanks.
Because you could have said, well, the QBQ business doesn't deal with that. The QBQ business is for corporations.
Right. But it's so clearly not.
100%.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, you know, what's your best advice and most practical advice? I want you to think about parents and educators for a second, okay? So what is your most practical advice for parents and educators if they're going to translate and transfer the core of what the QBQ message is of personal accountability? Mm-hmm. How do they transform that next generation? What is the most practical things they can do to help the children that they connect with?
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, we say in QBQ all the time, modeling is the most powerful teacher. Like, that is what we do. We model. So first off, we have to practice it ourselves. So that means read the book, listen to the audiobook, go through the workbook, and start doing the work. Start doing the work personally. Like you said, there's no way to teach this stuff without having to look at yourself first, because that's the whole crux of the whole system is personal accountability. Second, we say repetition is the motor of learning. Repeat, 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 repeat. So with my kids, I have to continually repeat it. I can model it. And yes, things are caught, not taught, but you also have to teach. So I think things are caught and taught, right? So you can't just model and then hope they pick up on it. You have to model it and then also use those moments to say, hey, so right now I'm really feeling like I want to complain about something, but I'm going to change my thoughts right now. And here's how I'm going to do that. And like, tell your kid or tell the teenager that you're working with on the job because they're a new employee or something, whatever it is in that next generation, whoever you're interacting with, your nieces and nephews, your grandkids, talk them through the process that is helping you change your thinking and then help them figure out a way to do it for theirs. So we model things, we repeat things, and then we use tools. And that would be sitting down and having your teenager read the QBQ book. Is it written for corporations? Yes. Have teenagers read it and found ways to apply it? Absolutely, all the time. So have them read the QBQ book. Have them work through I Own It with you. Have them watch some of our stuff that you can find on Facebook or YouTube, or go through our blog and find things that they can read about. We have to be intentional. If we're going to pass this on to the next generation, educators, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, everyone who has some sort of reach into that next generation has to decide, these are the values I want to pass on. And so I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to model it. And I'm going to find tools to help pass these values on.
It's really, really, that's really simply powerful. And what I really appreciated, the one thing you said, and I just want to park on this. And so again, if you're listening today, if you're in a corporate world, you can apply it corporately. If you're a parent, and you want to apply it that way, apply it that way. If you're an educator, apply it to your world. But the one thing I want to park on is that idea of letting people know what's going on underneath, because I call it, I talk to people all the time. I call it the Wizard of Oz syndrome. And I say most of us are just little people on a stool with our hands in this thing trying to be bigger than we are. If we let people behind the curtain of what we're doing and we expose them not only to the outside, what they're hearing, but the inside of the process, then they learn. Yeah. So what I loved about what you said is, you know, I have a choice to make. Let me explain how I'm going to approach this. I'm going to ask myself a better question. Yeah. That better question is going to begin with what or how. It's going to contain an I. It's going to focus on an action, a positive action I can take. Here's how I'm going to lead myself towards accountability. As I do that, I'm letting people behind the curtain, as opposed to saying, well, I'm a master at being accountable, but I can't share my secret with, with you because I'm the Wizard of Oz. So I think that really in and of itself is brilliant, because so often we're processing things or doing things, And we're teaching people what to do, but we're not teaching them how to do it.
Exactly. That's the beauty of QBQ. And that's what we hear over and over and over as John and I teach live sessions with corporations and groups, is you didn't just give us a theory. You gave us a practical three-step process for walking this out. And I do believe that that's why QBQ has been so effective, and it has staying power, because it's the how. It's the what and the how. It's not just the, hey, this is how we should live. It's the, here's how we should live, and let me show you how to do it.
100%. And that's what I have loved about it. And I think that is really critical for people who are listening to realize, again, that it's not enough to know why you choose to do it. It is not enough to know what you're doing, but how you're doing it, and then teaching the how is obviously the most practical part of this experience. I think it was Albert Einstein who said, theory and practice are the same. In practice, they're not. So again, theory is great, but if it doesn't translate into practical, applicable behavior and actions that people can take, it is very difficult for people to move forward.
Absolutely.
That is powerful. And again, really, real simple. This is what I also do love about this. If you haven't experienced a QBQ, and as a result of this conversation, you decide to do this today, I'll give you a warning, and I hope you find this respectful, Kristen. But if you're listening and you're looking for some book that you think is the most amazing thing that, and no one's ever said in the whole time of universe, this is not for you. Because as Kristen said, this is a timeless idea and principle. It's not just timely. It's not just, it's good right now. This isn't rocket science, but to practice it causes us to discipline ourselves. I think, if I recall, John, in the original, I think in the book, and then the original DVD material, which has been changed over the years to include you, I think at one point he talks about leadership being the moment by moment disciplining, right, of my thoughts, right? And I would probably add to that, and my actions. Yeah. It's a discipline. And so a lot of people, you know, they want things, you know, two easy steps, and it's real easy. This is easy, simple, but it's hard. It's hard.
Simple. It's not simplistic. It's not beneath us as leaders. It's something we desperately need, but walking it out each and every day takes discipline. You're absolutely right on that.
Absolutely. And so the exciting thing, again, the arc of this conversation is the generational journey. So as you're listening in today, and by the way, we appreciate you listening in. You're giving us some of your most precious resource, your time. You'll never get it back. Once you give it to us, it's gone, and we appreciate it. But listen, think about this journey of generations. You know, something was put in John Miller's hand. He's put it in Kristen's hand. Kristen and John have put it in the hands of thousands, countless thousands of other people, including myself, as part of this QBQ community. And I've endeavored to put it in the hands of my children and in the hands of people I've encountered, for the past 20 plus years. But my question to you and challenge to you today as listeners is, what are you transferring generation to generation? Is it something of value, and is it worthy, and will it ultimately impact their generation in positive and provocative ways for 5 years, 10 years, 1,000 years to come? I mean, isn't that, that's the opportunity, Kristen, that you and I have in our hand every day with this message and other messages, but particularly this message we're talking about. We have an opportunity every time we touch our children or somebody else, we're touching potentially generation upon generation upon generation into the future, which then goes, speaks to this issue of legacy that you talked about before.
Yeah. It's so fabulous.
It's exciting. Yeah. It's exciting. So listen, as we bring this conversation to an end today, two things I want to do. So my podcast is called The Uncommodified Podcast. And this is an idea for me that, you know, I spent a lot of time consulting and training in worlds where they sold commodities. And commodities, you know, by dictionary definition, is just something easily or readily available in multiple places. By that definition, almost everything's a commodity. You can get it somewhere else. Sure. So people become the uncommodifying experience around that when we choose to release what I would consider our uniqueness, the thing that we were created uniquely to do. So my question to you, when you're doing this thing called the QBQ, when you're teaching it, when you're in this world and you're being uniquely Kristen, you're not being John, you're being uniquely Kristen. What are you doing that's bringing your unique sense of who you are, and what is, how is that impacting and helping you stand out in the world that you live in? What is a unique Kristen expression look like for you?
I think what's interesting is I'm learning more and more about the Enneagram. I don't know if you are aware of that tool, but what that has helped me learn about myself is my intense inner drive for harmony. And then along with that, my ability to adapt to situations, to people, to the needs of my clients. And I love my dad, but I would not say adaptability is one of his strengths. And so being able to bring that to the client experience for QBQ has definitely been something that has not been readily available. And I think that if dad had been adaptable and harmony focused in the way that I am, he would not have built the company that he has built. So his strengths as a driver and an assertive individual, a sales guy, that built QBQ to where it is. And I think my personality, a bit softer, a bit more, I see a bit more gray in the world than he does, not in the terms of truth and values, but in the terms of like how we can do things and the strategy we use. I bring that to the table. And so that is me being uniquely me. Is me getting on a call with a client and saying, hey, well, what are your needs? Tell me. Like, I can flex. I can try something new here. Let's do something different. And that is me being Kristen in the QBQ environment. And I think that the two of us together make a really exciting team in that sense.
Yeah, very powerful. So again, so this idea of, you know, adaptability, flexibility for you is where your unique contribution comes out about how you were made, how you're wired. It's that piece of your DNA that makes you uniquely who you are, which is, again, that's an exciting concept for me and an idea that I've been exploring for a long time. You know, I think we spend so much time in our life often being told that we have to be like other people and fit in and fall in line and that kind of things. And then we end up giving up that uniqueness over time. And that to me is the sad part of the human experience. So I'm excited when I get to hear that answer from somebody like yourself. Yeah. What is that unique contribution? Because every time I hear that, I ask myself, wow, what's my unique contribution? How do I bring the thing that only Tim Windsor can bring in a situation? And it's not an issue of right or wrong or good or bad. It's my unique, authentic self, which I personally believe is one of the most powerful tools that we have, is our unique, authentic expression of who we are.
And I think on that too is what it's actually, my sister-in-law is a business coach. And so she is the one who kind of spoke into my life and said, Kristen, your adaptability is something to be cherished. It is a gift. Whereas to me, it was like, oh, that's just what I do. That's just who I am. And she's always telling me, if your response is, oh no, I just do that naturally, that's just who I am, that is your gift. That is what you bring to the table, because not everyone has that. So I've really been trying to embrace that adaptable side of me, because sometimes it drives me crazy because I can't seem to focus on anything or make my own decisions because I'm always willing to adapt. But I think it's important as we go on that journey of self-discovery to find those things that make us uniquely you, that to me seems like not that big of a deal, but it actually is, because it's the thing that not everyone does, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And as you say that, it just reminds me, so oftentimes I've been in situations over my life and, you know, I'm just doing what I do.
Right.
Okay. And it's not always perfect, for sure. And it's not always the greatest. You know, I have lots of big problems that I have created in 55 years. Yeah. Let's put it that way. But it's interesting sometimes, because people will come up after in a setting and they'll say something. And when they say it, my immediate sort of emotional response is to say, are you talking about someone else?
Right.
What I've learned to do over the years is to take it in and not sort of just take it
sit
in.
With it.
And then, and sit with it and chew on it, and sort of like a cow does, you know, just, and ask myself, what did I need to hear in that? And what is it affirming that I have to understand, that even though I don't maybe understand it or see it, this is my unique contribution? Yeah. Because so often other people are better at seeing it because they experience it different. And they say, wow, that is unique. I don't usually feel that way when I encounter somebody. And so, again, that's why this is an important idea for me. But what I love about what I get to do is I get to have great conversations with people like yourself and your dad and other people that, you know, frankly, over the years have been very influential in my life. And my guest list in this first 2 years of this sort of podcasting journey for me, I started in June of last year, so I'm not quite a year into it. And, you know, I basically assembled a list of people that have been very influential to me over my life. And I said, hey, I'm going to ask them if they want to speak with me and share that conversation with my listeners. You were one of these people, Kristen, because, you know, even though, again, we haven't met physically, yeah, we've had this encounter, what you do and how you've done it has had a powerful impact on me, and therefore on my clients, my customers, my family.
Oh, I love that.
And so it's one of the reasons why I wanted to sit down and have this chat, because you have been a provocateur in my life in relationship to embracing accountability. I came from a family that we were practitioners of shedding accountability. I mean, I came from a long line of blamers. I mean, seriously, we weren't serial killers, but we were serial blamers. And that was my legacy, frankly.
Yeah.
And as I've broken that legacy and frankly cut off that power, cut off, it's like a root system. You know, I've cut that root. I've laid an axe to it and said, I am not going to pass that legacy on to my family. We're not going to be serial blamers. We're going to be serial accountability people. We're going to take accountability for our action. Good, the good, the bad, the ugly. We're going to own it. And we're going to say, it was me.
Yeah, that's good.
And that, I want to thank you for what, how you've contributed to that, because as much as you wouldn't know that, you have, and I appreciate
it. Thanks. It's always good to hear that, because as I sit here and try to balance mom life and wife life and worker life and all that stuff, it's always good to remember the reach that this is having and how important it is to keep going.
100%, 100%. So listen, as we end, I'm going to give you an opportunity to challenge and encourage our listeners. You know, what is it you would like to say to them today as you think about how could you encourage or challenge them?
Yeah. So as I thought on this, I was actually talking to my husband about it, and I may have mentioned briefly, he's a pastor, so he's full of all sorts of little illustrations, just one-off comments all over the place. And he said, well, you know, whenever I talk about legacy, I talk about ripple effects. And I thought, oh, I'm going to steal that, because that's good. So I'm stealing his sermon metaphor. But I do think it is really important. We talk a lot in QBQ about legacy and about what we're bringing and then passing on to the next generation. But that visual image of ripple effects. So like my action right now is rippling out. And that ripple, it doesn't ever stop. It keeps going. It continues to have an effect. And so what are my actions rippling into the next generations right now? And so again, that can be at home and that can be in the workplace. It can be both places. But the question that I would leave you with, listeners, is to ask yourself, like, what ripple effects are my actions causing right now? And what can I do? Here's a great QBQ. What can I do to intentionally ripple into the next generation the good values that I think are most important to send forth? So looking at myself and really honing in on, you know, what are the three specific actions I can take to intentionally send good ripple effects to the next generation. And just take some time to reflect on that, because I think it is really important to figure that out and take the time to figure it out and then actually walk it out and do it. And hopefully using QBQ is a part of that process.
Absolutely. Great challenge. Powerful visual image. Thank Eric for it. And do me a favor. Don't be hard on him for the blueberries. Every once in a while, this happens. I know I'm a guy. Sometimes I get blueberry all over and I say
next
it was
time
my
I'll
kids.
Make chocolate muffins. Goodness, family.
There you go. See, the problem when your kids get older is you don't have them in your house to blame anymore. this is what happens when you get older. You have less people to blame in your house.
More often, so you can blame them.
Exactly. Okay. Listen, Kristen, thank you so much for your time today. And those listening in, we appreciate you listening in. Do me a favor, email me at tim@theuncommodified.com or connect with me on social media and let Kristen and I know how you're uncorking this conversation, how you're pouring it out into your life, how you're taking a pebble of your behavior, your positive behavior, and dropping it in that sea around you and affecting people around you for generations to come. This is our opportunity. This is our obligation. This is our privilege. Thanks for listening in today, and have an excellent day. Thanks for listening in today. If you have not subscribed to the Uncommodified podcast yet, do it today. Do it right now. And please rate and review the show on whatever platform you listen on. That would be so helpful to help us spread the word. Now it's time to own what you heard today. Get it out of your head and activate it in your life. And when you do, tell me how you are uncommodifying yourself and standing out for all the right reasons in a very crowded world.